Okay, I'm still trying to figure out what to do on Thursday, since it sounds like seven people are gonna be gone, at least. And the weather actually looks like it might be fairly decent, so I've gotta give this a little bit more thought. I didn't realize so many folks would be gone on these range trips. It's too bad.
I didn't either, I already got a different degree.
So you're not just missing this class, right? You miss...
It's real convenient, super convenient. I'd so much rather just spend a whole week on best class. That's the one that I'm really all about.
You're just bitter because she won't let you use websites.
I'm bitter about a lot of things in that class.
Okay. Hey, what we're going to do this morning is go through the ultisols, and they're the next order on our list. And I don't have a whole lot of stuff, so I think I'll probably get done here a little bit early. And one thing I wanted to check on, how many people have done something on their projects? Okay, you've thought about it. You've done the mental planning. Okay, well that's good, because you know when you get a stretch of weather that's somewhat suitable, it really would be a good idea to get out and try and get things done, because you know, what's that?
Said like Thursday during lab.
Yeah, well, maybe that'd be a possibility. You know, we're getting down to only 2 weeks of class after this. And what I planned originally was next week. Next week is the test scheduled on Thursday. And I thought that probably would be a better time, have the test and then just have open lab. You guys could go out and work. But I gotta give this a little bit more thought. So anyway, if you haven't gotten started, I really encourage you to do it, because the time is starting to get a little bit short. So let's back up here. There we go. Okay, so here's the look at soil taxonomy. And you see an entire page long definition in the keys for ultisols. And what I've tried to do is highlight the main points in red. And you can see up here at the top, soils that have either an argillic or candic horizon. And that's kind of an important point, that these soils are required to have a subsurface horizon of clay accumulation, either argillic or candic horizon. And one other thing, base saturation of less than 35%. And what is base saturation? Somebody tell me. It's definitely related to that. If you look at the cation exchange capacity of a soil, and if you calculate the percentage of that cation exchange capacity that has calcium, magnesium, potassium, or sodium on it, that would be your percent base saturation. So it's really the proportion of the CEC that is occupied by base cations. And what you might have learned in intro soils is that it's kind of a proxy for fertility, because calcium, magnesium, and potassium are important plant macronutrients. So the higher the base saturation, the more of those are probably going to be available to plants. And so that's one of the requirements of ultisols, those two things. And the idea here, if you skip down here, item two, in this case, the ultisols have one or two. And item two down here, argillic or candic horizon, and there you see the base saturation of less than 35% again. The only point about this base saturation I want to make is that it's done at not in the surface horizon, but in fact, it's actually at quite a depth. And if you read through here, it's either going to be somewhere between 1.25 meters and 1.8 meters below the soil surface. So it's way down in the subsoil. And the reason for that, why do you think that the base saturation is considered at that sort of a depth rather than up in the surface?
Leaching.
Well, it could be related to leaching, But what would you do with the soil that was pretty acid to begin with if you were using it for agriculture? Every few years, yeah, you put lime on it. And what's going to happen to the base saturation up in the surface if you dump lime on a soil? Well, it's going to go up. So you don't want to be changing the classification of the soil just by doing something as common as adding lime. So that's why they're using this depth that's down in the subsoil, because that's pretty difficult to change. So anyway, just remember those two things, the clay accumulation, either an argillic or a candic horizon, and then the other thing would be this base saturation less than 35%. So if you look at our abbreviated key here, down in the ultisols, they're described as strongly leached soils with a subsurface zone of clay accumulation and less than 35% base saturation. And let's look at a few examples of these. The name ultisol, the Latin root is ultimus, which means the last. And I think the idea here is if you look at ultisols, they pretty much, at least morphologically, they represent sort of the upper end of soil development in terms of horizonation. Because you've got an argillic or candic horizon, they often will have an E horizon. The horizons are pretty easy to pick up, and they do represent this a fairly advanced stage of soil forming processes, like accumulation of clays and weathering and that type of thing. Once you get past ultisols, you get into the oxisols, and we sort of describe those as being the senile soils, you know, a little bit over the hill. So the ultisols, strongly leached, and that's the idea of this low base saturation related to it. Typically, they are forest soils, they're acid, and the other note here, low native fertility. They're found in the mostly in humid, temperate, and tropical regions of the world, and usually they're going to be on older and stable landscapes. So a lot of ultisols are, in terms of age, are going to be fairly old. There's been a lot of weathering. You won't find too many primary minerals left in it, and the bases like calcium, magnesium, and potassium tend to be leached out. Therefore, you get the low base saturation. Clay accumulation, usually you see these yellow and red colors associated with iron oxides and ultisols, and you've heard the term of the red clay soils of the southeastern United States, Georgia red clay. Well, what they're talking about is one of these ultisols. If you look at the distribution on the global distribution, about 8% of the ice-free land area, and you can see the pink color here, I guess. You'll note that they are mostly in the tropical regions and subtropical regions. Note the big zone here in southeastern United States, and scattered through Central South America, Africa, and Southeast Asia. And as far as the distribution in the U.S., look at this map. You can see the dark colors here really clustered in the southeastern U.S. So there's the red clays. There are some west of the Mississippi River, you can see here, getting into Texas. And remember, this is kind of our dividing line right here, the 100th meridian, the humid versus the semi-arid climate. And so these are all in the humid side of that. And if you get over the Pacific Northwest, you'll notice in the Cascades and the west side, you have ultisols that are present there. And not a little bit different than what's in the southeastern United States, but still these would qualify as ultisols. And in the U.S., the land area is about 9% thereabouts. A little bit about land use. It says here that because of the favorable climatic regimes, usually many of the ultisols are in eutic soil moisture regimes, the ultisols can support very productive forests. You think about the forest industry in the United States, where is it really centered? Southeastern United States, and that's most of it is going to be on ultisols. The high acidity, low quantities, or relatively low quantities of calcium, magnesium, and potassium obviously make them not well suited for continuous agriculture unless you are going to add those nutrients. And I guess the other note here is really important. With fertilizers and lime being added, ultisols are very productive soils. I'm going to show you an example of this in a few minutes. The suborders, there are five of them, and see them listed here, the order that they key out. Start off with the wet ones, and those would be the aqualts. The humults would be well-drained ultisols that have high organic matter content. You notice the root there, hum, usually means organic matter. The udults would be the ultisols of the humid climates. The ustults, ustic moisture regime, and then finally the xerults would be the ultisols with the xeric regime. The map here that you can see, you notice most of the ultisols in the United States are udults, and throughout the southeast, you notice the blue color here in the coastal areas, those are aqualts, or the more poorly drained ones. In the Pacific Northwest, the purple color, you can't really see it that well, but a lot of the ultisols are going to be humults, and you get down into California and you get into more of the xerults with the xeric moisture regime. This is the suborder diagram, and the three points on the triangle are wet and dry, and over here in the lower left-hand corner, humic or high organic matter. And you can see how they're arrayed there with the aqualts. The dry ones would be the ustults and xerults, udults in the middle, and then the high organic matter over there on the left, or bottom left-hand corner.
Can you leave that up for a second?
Yeah. Write that down. One thing you might want to try, if you print off the notes, and then you don't have to write all this stuff down, you can just put some other, write a few miscellaneous comments on there. Because I know this, I don't expect everyone to be copying this stuff down. Okay, let's see, some examples here then. Start off, and this is going to be one of the wet varieties, or an aqualt. And I think you've seen this profile before because it's a good example of what a poorly drained soil looks like. You notice the subsoil, the gray colors, and the lack of the high chroma colors. And in this case, the designation on these horizons, you got an A horizon up at the top, fairly dark, which is not unusual for a wet soil. And then all of this is just a BTG, so it's a waterlogged argillic horizon, and the great group classification you can see there is umbraqualt. Anybody want to offer an idea of what the UMBR formative element represents? Yeah, it has an umbric epithet on, and if you remember, umbric is just like malic except for what? Yeah, it has low base saturation. So this is one that's got the thickness and the darkness requirements and the organic carbon contents for a malic epipedon, but low base saturation. The note here, obviously, with the glay colors, that you'd see something like this and it should be a red flag. You know it's poorly drained and therefore unsuitable for a lot of pretty common land uses. Yeah.
Do you see that BTG over here in some of these areas that like have a lot of clay, like this ultilum stuff?
Not around here, we don't. They're not that common. And one thing, I can't stress this enough. Just because a horizon has a T on it, does that mean that it's clayey? No, it just means that this has more clay relative to what's above it or what's below it. So don't necessarily think because something's got an argillic horizon that it's a clayey soil, because in many cases it's not. The second example, here's a well-drained ultisol, and this is a good example of one of these from the west side of the Mississippi River. And this is a typic haplodult, and it's from Arkansas. formed in metamorphosed sandstone, probably pretty old. But you can see the horizon sequence on this. O horizon, it's formed under forest, A, E, B, T, and C. And this is kind of the idea of the ultisol in terms of horizon formation. You get some pretty well-developed and well-expressed horizons in here with the sequence that you see there. And this would not be uncommon for a lot of ultisols. This one hasn't been plowed and put into cultivation. The note here that this and other haplodelts are generally found on landscape that are at least late Pleistocene in age, and a lot of them are going to be older than that. So the point is, you don't find these soils on young landscapes. The diagnostic horizons and features in this, what you know, it's going to have what? By definition, it's got to have what sort of a diagnostic horizon? Candic or argillic. And in this case, this one would simply be an argillic horizon. And what else would this one have besides an argillic horizon? Ochric epipedon, yeah. Because you know, like in many forest soils, the A horizon is not that well expressed there. It's not that dark and it's not that thick. Certainly not like what you'd see in a grassland soil. Okay, so, oh, yeah, Mateo.
The haplo means that it doesn't have very low, a good expression of horizon?
No, it means that it doesn't have a natric or plinthite, any of these other types of features in there. It's just an argillic horizon. Okay. That's it. Or it's not a candic horizon, it's just a plain old argillic horizon. And that's kind of the simple variety of them. Okay, so look at some of the soils in the southeast United States. This is the what they call the Piedmont region. And a lot of these soils are ultisols. They're by far the dominant soil order there. And many of these things have been farmed for over 200 years. And what's interesting is if you look at the records in places like North Carolina and Virginia and Georgia, where these things have been farmed for a long time, they figured out early on that you had to put lime and fertilizers on these soils in order to have them be productive. If you didn't, you'd be forced with doing something like shifting cultivation, where you clear the vegetation, maybe burn it, get a crop for a few years, and then that's pretty much it. You got to move on, and obviously you can't do that. So many of these soils show the effects of long-term agricultural production, and a lot of them have been eroded. You notice in this field, you've got some higher chromocolor sticking up there on the convex areas, and that's probably where the BT horizon is pretty much up at the surface as a result of some of the probably erosion in this case. And I'll show you that here's the soil profile that goes with this. This one has been cultivated, so you probably don't see the real distinct horizons like an A and an E. Instead, you've got an AP horizon up at the top, and I'm sure whatever E horizon was there has long since been incorporated into that AP. You've got BT horizons in here, and then at the bottom, this is 5 feet down here, it's starting to transition into a BC horizon. This soil series is known as the Cecil series, and I believe it's the most widely and extensively mapped soil in the United States. It's estimated, what does it say here, the Cecil soils are on nearly one-third of what they call the Piedmont uplands in the southeast, and they form on ridges and side slopes, variety of parent materials, and they're mapped all the way from Virginia down to Alabama. So they do cover a large geographical area. The BT horizons typically have texture of clay and maybe up to about 70% clay. And in this case, this BT horizon qualifies as a candic horizon. And you remember what a candic horizon is? It's got a clay increase and what else? Yeah, the clays are low activity clays, and primarily kaolinite would be the main one. So this is a candic horizon, probably an ochric epipedon here. the note, the candacarizin, low activity clays. They mentioned kaolinite and hydroxy interlayered vermiculite. I wouldn't worry too much about that. But note the classification up here. Fine, kaolinitic, thermic, typic, can haplodult. So it's kind of a long name. You've got the ultisol, eutic moisture regime, and then the great group there, can haplodult. You got two terms, really kind of two terms in there. The K-A-N refers to the fact that it's got a candic horizon. And then the H, the haplo part, which we see a lot, in this case means that it's doesn't have the any other features that you might see in some of the ultisol, just basic candic horizon. It's kind of it's actually a more complicated explanation, but just recognize the K-A-N in here. And then the fine particle size family with about 60-70% clay in many of these, kaolinitic, would give you an idea of the dominant mineralogy, and then thermic, of course, is the temperature regime there. And this is also in North Carolina, it's what they call the coastal plain, and this is one of the most relief-challenged places I've ever been, where you look at a landscape like this, to me, anybody else that lives in the West, it looks flat, right? Well, when you go out with the mappers in this part of the world, they'll say, yeah, if you look down that slope over there, and you kind of look and wonder, what slope are you talking about? But they'll actually map about, I think, five different series in something like this, and it's all according to drainage class, because the low-lying areas, which are in the background there where the trees are, you would have aqualts, the wet ultisols, and actually here in the foreground would be the best drained soils, and I'll show you, I think the next picture is an example of that. So it's a function of drainage and high water tables and how much they're wet. Anybody know what this crop is?
Tobacco.
Yeah, that's tobacco, and the picture's a little bit older, but you probably don't see much of that anymore, but that used to be the big cash crop in Virginia, the Carolinas, was tobacco. That's what people really grew to make money, and it didn't take a whole lot of area of it. But anyway, the background here are the aqualts, and that first picture that I showed you, the umbra qualt, that would be from back there, and here in the foreground would be this guy. And this is a fine loamy, kaolinitic, thermic, typic, candy udult. And this is a soil known as the Norfolk series, and it's also a really extensively mapped one in the southeast. The difference here is that this isn't in the Piedmont, it's in the coastal plain, so you have a lot of these marine deposits as the parent materials. And they tend to not be quite as clayey. They've got a lot of sand in them often. And you'll note the particle size family, they're fine loamy. So between 18 and 35% clay, not nearly as clayey as the ones you saw previously. This one I think has once upon a time had been cultivated, but it's an E horizon up there on the top. It might even be a plowed E horizon, I don't know. And then most of what you're looking at here is a VT horizon. There's 4 feet down at the bottom. And the idea here, you notice the previous profile was a can haplodult. This one is a candy udult. Still has a candic horizon in it. But the idea is that it's a real deep one. Here you are down below 4 feet and you're still into this zone of clay accumulation. So that's kind of the difference between the two. I wouldn't worry too much about it, but if you're curious. The BT horizon, in this case, sandy clay loam texture often. And it says here, these are once forested, but they're well drained. So they've been cleared and used to produce a variety of crops like tobacco and soybeans and things like that. And here's the next example, which I know you've seen before. This one's from Georgia, and it's called the Dothan series, and it's a fine loamy, kaolinitic, thermic, plinthic candy udult. So you, at the great group level, still a candy udult like we saw before, but you notice that the subgroup that word plinthic comes in here, indicating the presence of plinthite. And you can see it down here in the bottom of the soil profile. It's this sort of mottled red, gray, yellow looking material. And this is the stuff that it will irreversibly harden into ironstone, or people call it laterite. It has a bunch of different names, but the really hard stuff. And I guess the thing on this one, it's plowed. You don't really see too much of an A horizon left in there, but it's a little bit darker. And it appears that some of the E horizon that was present there has been incorporated into the plow layer. So there's really no distinct E, but what's being designated as a BE horizon, so kind of a transition zone. It's a little bit lighter there. Here's the BT horizon, actually extending from here all the way down to the bottom of the profile here, which is, you're looking at least a meter and a half here. So very deep accumulation of clays. And then the plinthite, the BTV horizon there at the bottom. So this plinthite is really common in ultisols. We mentioned it for oxisols as well. And it has this appearance. One of the things that's interesting about plinthite, there's a lot of stuff that you see in these ultisols and similar soils that looks like it, kind of has that same appearance, but it won't irreversibly harden. And I don't know the reason for that, but the old-timer mappers, when they were working in these areas where you had plinthite, what they said they would do is they look in a barrow pit by the side of the road for little pieces of ironstone. And this would be the plinthite that has been subjected to repeated wetting and drying cycles, and it actually hardens into this rock-like material. And that's how they would identify that it really was plinthite. And we can see some of it. We actually have some of this stuff in Latah County here, over east of Troy. And hopefully we'll get a chance to take a look at that on a field trip. And the last picture I've got here is just the plinthite blocks, and you guys have seen these before, where they're cut out of the ground. And we don't use them for building material in the southeast, but other parts of the world, it is a major building material because they don't have rocks. Okay, I have a couple supplemental pictures here for you, just to illustrate some of the main features of these things. And this first image has two maps. The top one you recognize. It shows you the distribution of ultisols in the U.S. and the concentration in the southeast. The second one is a map that shows the various glacial deposits in the United States. And I wouldn't worry about all the colors, but the yellows, the greens, and the purples, most of what you see in here, represent the glacial deposits from the previous glacial cycles, the most recent and the one before that, the Illinois and the Kansan, and a little bit of Nebraskan. So, you know, this would have been during the last ice age. But looking at those two maps, what can you say about the distribution of ultisols relative to glaciated regions in the United States? They don't overlap, and in fact, there, in most cases, there's a pretty good boundary between where the southernmost extent of the glaciers and where the ultisols start. And that, I guess the point is that these are older soils, and most of these glaciated landscapes, we consider geologically to be fairly young. So you're not gonna find ultisols on these younger landscapes. The other thing, this about base saturation. I have the data for two soils here. One is the Cecil series, this Can Haplodult, and the other is a mollisol. We haven't talked about these yet, but I think you know they have fairly high base saturation. And what I've plotted is the base saturation with depth. And look at the orange set of points there for the Can Haplodult. You notice the highest base saturation is up in the surface. And as you get further down into the soil, here's a meter and a half right down here, the base saturation gets lower and lower. And that's pretty typical of ultisols. The concentration of bases is going to be up in the surface, and a lot of that has to do with just the nutrient cycling that takes place in the A horizon and up close to the surface, where the you get most of the decomposition of organic residues, plant residues, and the release of nutrients. So as you get down deeper in the soil profile, that stuff is pretty highly weathered, and you just don't see much calcium, magnesium, and potassium. In contrast, look at this RG Udall from Iowa, and you notice that the highest base saturations with depth. And that's something that's it's pretty typical, and the lowest base saturation on this mollisol is up in the surface. So two very different trends. The ultisol's highest base saturation is typically going to be at the surface, and it's going to decline with depth. And then we talked about this, the requirement for base saturation being less than 35%. And it's somewhere down around a meter and a half, and you can see this particular example, base saturation might be about 10% down there, something like that, so very low. Okay, so people look at this and they think, well, man, these ultisols are pretty lousy soils. And in fact, they're really productive soils. Here is some information from Webb Soil Survey. It's on the internet, but this is the legal documentation for soil resources in the United States. And here is I just picked an area in North Carolina and one in Iowa, and this is for soybean production. And what I want you to notice is this column of numbers, which is the yield, and it's bushels per acre of soybeans. All these map units, you can see North Carolina, 45 to 50s. Here's one that's kind of low, 32. But if you compare these with the ones in Iowa, there is no statistical difference in the soybean yields. And I think the point here is that ultisols are very productive soils. The one caveat is that they're only going to be productive if you have lime and fertilizers. This mollisol in Iowa, I don't know if they're probably fertilizing a little bit. I doubt they've limed it very much. But we think about mollisols as being really fertile soils and really productive, which they are. But in many cases, you've got a situation where what we're effectively doing is mining the nutrients that are in them. And in ultisols, there are really no nutrients in there to mine. So if you want to have a good nutrient status in the soil, you've got to add that stuff. And in North Carolina and Georgia, South Carolina, Virginia, people have been adding lime and fertilizers for a couple of centuries. And it's just what you have to do to make those soils productive. This is a figure out of your book, out of the chapter on ultisols. It just shows a block diagram in the Carolinas of how you would see ultisols in relation to some of the other soils. So here's the coastal plain here and the ocean. You've got these barrier islands out here. We haven't talked about these kinds of soils, but they're essentially sand. And then as you get into the coastal plain, you've got these wet ultisols or the aqualts, and those are mixed in with some of the haplodults, candy udults. And then as you get up into the Piedmont region, a little more relief, you get into the canned haplodults and finally into the more mountainous areas, and you get into different soils there because of the steeper slopes. But so really dominant, this whole area dominated by ultisols. And here's kind of an interesting thing. This is a mafic intrusion of mafic rock, meaning it's got, well, probably more of the minerals in it, like the iron and magnesium containing minerals, ferromagnesium minerals. And notice that it's labeled as a haplodalf. And as we're going to see here, the difference between an alfasol and an ultisol really comes down to base saturation. And because of the parent material, in this case, this soil is going to have higher base saturation. And as a result, it comes out in a different soil order. So anyway, that's kind of a general perspective of how you might see these ultisols in the southeast United States. And the last one I have is an example from next door in Oregon, Willamette Valley, the Jory series, which is a fine mixed active mesic, xeric paleohumult. This would be the not uncommon for the types of humults or the types of ultisols that you find in the Willamette Valley and over on the west side. And in this case, this one's kind of interesting. It's found in the Willamette Valley and the foothills of the Coast Range over there. And it is the official state soil of Oregon. It's actually legislatively designated as the state soil. And this is what a profile would look like. But there are a lot of these and similar types of soils in Oregon when you get into the Willamette Valley and especially up in the Coast Range. One reason this soil is so important and part of the reason it got designated as the state soil is that it's probably the most extensive soil that for the wine grapes that are produced in the Willamette Valley. So what I'm waiting for is the official Oregon state highway map, and you know how I have a picture of the state tree and the state bird, and hopefully it'll have a profile shot of the Jory series at some point. But don't hold your breath. I'm not sure when that'll happen.
Do they have to use a lot of lime
fertilizer? They do, and a lot of it is what they're using in a lot of the vineyards over there is all of the previous year's grapes and everything that's left over, they just add that back to the soil. So I don't know exactly what the fertilizer demand is, but they are certainly reusing all the nutrients that are produced. And that's also true of ultisols if you look at some of the farming practices in the South America and Africa, where organic residues are really important in maintaining some level of productivity on them.
What is the pale?
Okay, this, if you look at the name here, remember the humults, these are organic matter rich. Pale means that it has a very abrupt increase in clay content, and it's also a deep accumulation. So I don't know, there's no scale on this thing, but you get down to the bottom of this and you're still into the BT horizon. And in this case, it's not a candic horizon, it's just a plain old argillic horizon, but it's a very deep one. And so you get the term paley. Okay, well that's all I have for the ultisol. So I guess I'll see most of you on Thursday and a lot gonna be off in what, the Boise area. Field tripping.